Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. I've got a lot of material I'd like to present today, so let's get right to it. I'll have updates on the coronavirus pandemic later, along with a look at the activities of leftist, globalist, technocrat, and Microsoft founder Bill Gates and his campaign to vaccinate everyone in the world. But first, let's talk about the protests and rioting that have erupted in cities across the country in response to the tragic death of George Floyd at the hands of police in Minneapolis. I don't want to rush to judgment about it, but it was shocking to view the cell phone video of Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin kneeling on the neck of Floyd as Floyd gasped that he couldn't breathe and later died. The four police involved with the incident were fired, and Chauvin has been charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter, although that hasn't satisfied the protesters. Keep in mind, it's been well established that the great majority of these rioters in Minneapolis, and by inference, I think it's safe to say those in Atlanta, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and other Democrat-controlled cities where the protests and unrest, ostensibly over Floyd's death, have been occurring, and these are not, for the most part, local residents. They are, in fact, professional radicals paid through the network of organizations funded by billionaire George Soros and other wealthy leftists, possibly individuals from outside the country, even possibly foreign governments giving money to some of these organizations. And they're paid to come here from other states and stir up hatred and violence. This is all part of a scheme, a plot by the political left to create chaos and destruction, blame President Trump, erode his support, and help the left win the presidency. I doubt it will succeed, but a lot of damage is being done in the communities where these riots are being conducted, and the people in those communities are going to suffer for a long time because of it. Equally shocking is the police and National Guard responses, whereby they are being ordered to stand back and do nothing as the rioters burn buildings, including a Minneapolis police station, loot, deface, and destroy property, and injure law enforcement personnel and innocent bystanders. This stems from the left's perception that such rioting is justified due to supposed widespread racism and social injustice in America. The leftist-dominated mainstream media, meanwhile, has been all but cheering on the rabble-rousing rioters, seeing it as justification for the supposed institutional racism of America, which they hate so much and long to see utterly destroyed. That is, the nation of America. With this in mind, I had to laugh at the irony of the situation in Atlanta, where the rioters apparently got misdirected and began vandalizing the headquarters of CNN, also known as the Communist News Network. Let's listen to some audio from Dr. Steve Turley's channel on YouTube, which provided on May 29 an interesting discussion of the Floyd death unrest. Earlier in this video, Turley showed the arrest of a CNN reporter during the demonstrations in Minneapolis, and he then played video of a discussion on the unrest between two of the left of the CNN's leading luminaries, not the best and brightest of the media world, but reliable leftist ideologues, Don Lemon and Chris Fredo Cuomo, brother of New York's governor. Please play soundbite one.
As I'm sure you're all well aware of, riots have raged throughout Minneapolis and other American cities in response to the tragic death of George Floyd, a black man killed by a white police officer. Now, of course, we're still in the process of fact-gathering precisely what happened there, but all four police officers involved have been fired. And even President Trump, from what he's seen, thinks the officers were at fault and has no sympathy for them. But neither does Trump have a shred of sympathy for the rioters and the looters and the vandals that have used the tragedy as an excuse to start to burn down Minneapolis. However, it didn't take long for our political class to launch into a prolonged screed of cultural Marxist rhetoric that is currently justifying this rampant scourge of violence as a legitimate response to an inherently and perniciously racist society. The irony of this reporter getting arrested is that he's part of a supposed news organization that is expressing its overt solidarity with the rioters. Here's just a sample of this racial rhetoric coming from our mainstream media. Take a look.
Black people's right to protest is secondary to white people's right to be in armed protest with long guns, terrifying looking war weapons.
This is how the protest of Floyd's death ended up. Police in riot gear, flooding the streets with tear gas and shooting rubber bullets into the crowd. Huh. Another example of how this pandemic has been a kind of blacklight, exposing all the inequalities in American life.
And that's the meme that's going around right now with the cops, with the black kid on the ground saying hello to the white guy in camo with the AK-47 and the mask who was protesting in Michigan. That when it's white people with guns and they're out and they're angry and their faces with cops.
Didn't see any of that.
Everybody's civil.
It's human beings' natural inclination when they feel wrong, when they feel put upon, when they're living under oppressed conditions, is to lash out. And this is the history of the modern West. It's the history of the world in some ways. And so part of what we have to do is try to understand the context that led to what happened.
It is not incumbent upon black people to stop racism. To stop this, it is incumbent upon people who hold the power in this society to help to do that, to do the heavy lifting. And guess who that is? Who is that, Chris?
White people.
Now, what's essential to get here is that what you just heard in that montage is demonstrably cultural Marxist rhetoric. What you heard over and over again is what's called the power plus prejudice definition of race. All right, don't forget that. The power plus prejudice definition of race. This is the notion that non-white people cannot possibly be racist, since you need political power to be racist, and only white people in America ultimately hold political power. That's the power plus prejudice definition of racism. Forget the fact that racism is an extremely complicated phenomenon to actually define. The scholarly literature reflects that clearly. It is an extremely complicated issue, but not to Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo, who actually believe that, you know, Chris Cuomo actually believes that calling an Italian Fredo is equivalent to the N-word. No, for them, it's completely simple. White people, by definition, are racist because they benefit from their race's hold on political power and privilege. And this Marxist conception, this cultural Marxist conception, the world facts, actual facts don't matter. It doesn't matter to these leftist liberals that statistics demonstrate that whites and Hispanics are three times more likely to be shot and killed by police officers than blacks. In fact, police officers are actually at a higher risk of being shot by a black assailant than the other way around.
Now, if you watch much of CNN, I don't, but I did see some video some months ago where old Chris Cuomo was broadcasting from Cuba wearing a shirt that Castro supposedly gave his father, the former governor of New York, and stating on air that the promise of communism was that we were all going to be equal under it. All right, moving on to the COVID-19, as it is known, world pandemic, it is also known. Besides the coronavirus, U.S. deaths from the pandemic, mostly elderly and immunosuppressed individuals, have now topped 100,000 and worldwide more than 1 million. But at the same time, the U.S. and other nations around the world are beginning to slowly reopen their economies after crippling shutdowns in efforts to reduce infections. This is happening as we are seeing broad declines in hospitalizations and deaths from the virus. Along with this is increasing criticism of the lockdowns and suspicion that they have been more harsh and prolonged than necessary. Here's a clip from the Rush Limbaugh radio show May 26th on the left's attempts to use the pandemic and shutdown for political purposes. Play soundbite two, please.
So let's take a look at where we are. The moving lockdown goalposts. Wait till you hear what we've got coming up in the stacks of stuff here. This is, and it's going to confirm all your instincts anyway. 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, they were telling us we can't open until we flatten the curve. And we have to flatten the curve. We have to save our hospitals. We have to save the healthcare system. We can't open up till we flatten the curve. And all the while trying to convince people that flattening the curve was actually curing or getting rid of the virus, which was never going to happen by flattening the curve or staying home or locking. Locking down was never going to get rid of the virus. Then 1 month ago, they said we can't open until we have massive testing. We can't open until we have massive contact tracing. We can't open until we get all these new things moving the goalpost. 2 weeks ago, we can't open until we have a vaccine. Today, we can't open until Biden's elected. As far as the people are on the left concerned, we can't open, period. We cannot have an economic rebirth. We cannot have economic growth because all of this is tied to trying to tie Trump to what they're trying to create as an economic disaster.
You may not know that the communist Chinese government, once the COVID-19 pandemic started in Wuhan, China, late last year, prohibited travel into and out of Wuhan with the rest of mainland China. At the same time, the Chinese government publicly downplayed the seriousness of the public health threat and allowed unrestricted travel between Wuhan and the rest of the world, thus ensuring a worldwide outbreak of the disease. As the coronavirus pandemic spread, the World Health Organization, headed by a reported Ethiopian Marxist supported by communist China, defended China's actions and hailed it as a model for other nations to emulate in responding to pandemics. On May 29, President Trump held a White House news conference where he announced the severing of U.S. ties to the World Health Organization and new U.S. sanctions against Red China, which he harshly criticized for the pandemic actions. Here's most of Trump's news conference. Play soundbite 3, please.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'm here today to talk about our relationship with China and several new measures to protect American security and prosperity. China's pattern of misconduct is well known. For decades, they've ripped off the United States like no one has ever done before. Hundreds of billions of dollars a year were lost dealing with China, especially over the years during the prior administration. China raided our factories, offshored our jobs, gutted our industries, stole our intellectual property, and violated their commitments under the World Trade Organization. To make matters worse, they are considered a developing nation, getting all sorts of benefits that others, including the United States, are not entitled to. But I have never solely blamed China for this. They were able to get away with the theft like no one was able to get away with before because of past politicians and, frankly, past presidents. But unlike those who came before, my administration negotiated and fought for what was right. It's called fair and reciprocal treatment. China has also unlawfully claimed territory in the Pacific Ocean, threatening freedom of navigation and international trade. And they broke their word to the world on ensuring the autonomy of Hong Kong. The United States wants an open and constructive relationship with China, but achieving that relationship requires us to vigorously defend our national interests. The Chinese government has continually violated its promises to us and so many other nations. These plain facts cannot be overlooked or swept aside. The world is now suffering as a result of the malfeasance of the Chinese government. China's cover-up of the Wuhan virus allowed the disease to spread all over the world, instigating a global pandemic that has cost more than 100,000 American lives and over a million lives worldwide. Chinese officials ignored their reporting obligations to the World Health Organization and pressured the World Health Organization to mislead the world when the virus was first discovered by Chinese authorities. Countless lives have been taken and profound economic hardship has been inflicted all around the globe. They strongly recommended against me doing the early ban from China. But I did it anyway and was proven to be 100% correct. China has total control over the World Health Organization. Despite only paying $40 million per year compared to what the United States has been paying, which is approximately $450 million a year. We have detailed the reforms that it must make and engage with them directly, but they have refused to act. Because they have failed to make the requested and greatly needed reforms, we will be today terminating our relationship with the World Health Organization and redirecting those funds to other worldwide and deserving urgent global public health needs. The world needs answers from China on the virus. We must have transparency. Why is it that China shut off infected people from Wuhan to all other parts of China? It went nowhere else. It didn't go to Beijing. It went nowhere else. But they allowed them to freely travel throughout the world, including Europe and the United States. The death and destruction caused by this is incalculable. We must have answers, not only for us, but for the rest of the world. This pandemic has underscored the crucial importance of building up America's economic independence, reshoring our critical supply chains, and protecting America's scientific and technological advances. For years, the government of China has conducted illicit espionage to steal our industrial secrets, of which there are many. Today, I will issue a proclamation to better secure our nation's vital university research and to suspend the entry of certain foreign nationals from China who we have identified as potential security risks. I am also taking action to protect the integrity of America's financial system, by far the best in the world. I am instructing my presidential working group on financial markets to study the differing practices of Chinese companies listed on the U.S. financial markets with the goal of protecting American investors. Investment firms should not be subjecting their clients to the hidden and undue risks associated with financing Chinese companies that do not play by the same rules. Americans are entitled to fairness and transparency. Several of the most significant actions we're taking pertain to deeply troubling situations unfolding in Hong Kong. This week, China unilaterally imposed control over Hong Kong security. This was a plain violation of Beijing's treaty obligations with the United Kingdom in the Declaration of 1984 and explicit provisions of Hong Kong's basic law. It has 27 years to go. The Chinese government's move against Hong Kong is the latest in a series of measures that are diminishing the city's longstanding and very proud status. This is a tragedy for the people of Hong Kong, the people of China, and indeed the people of the world. China claims it is protecting national security. But the truth is that Hong Kong was secure and prosperous as a free society. Beijing's decision reverses all of that. It extends the reach of China's invasive state security apparatus into what was formerly a bastion of liberty. The latest incursion, along with other recent developments that degraded the territory's freedoms, makes clear that Hong Kong is no longer sufficiently autonomous to warrant the special treatment that we have afforded the territory since the handover. China has replaced its promised formula of one country, two systems with one country, one system. Therefore, I am directing my administration to begin the process of eliminating policy exemptions that give Hong Kong different and special treatment. My announcement today will affect the full range of agreements we have with Hong Kong, from our extradition treaty to our export controls on dual-use technologies and more, with few exceptions. We will be revising the State Department's travel advisory for Hong Kong to reflect the increased danger of surveillance and punishment by the Chinese state security apparatus. We will take action to revoke Hong Kong's preferential treatment as a separate customs and travel territory from the rest of China. The United States will also take necessary steps to sanction PRC and Hong Kong officials directly or indirectly involved in eroding Hong Kong's autonomy and just if you take a look, smothering, absolutely smothering Hong Kong's freedom. Our actions will be strong. Our actions will be meaningful.
After the U.S., the second largest funder of the World Health Organization has been the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is reported to have paid some $327 million to the WHO's general and fiduciary funds in 2017. Other funders include vaccine makers and pharmaceutical companies. Now let's take a look at Bill Gates, a longtime Democratic Party supporter and philanthropist who has become involved in world health issues and whose foundation in 2010 called for a, quote, decade of vaccines, close quote, to be developed ostensibly to improve the health of the world's populations. During this period, Bill Gates' net worth reportedly ballooned from $50 billion to a staggering more than $100 billion. Gates has now committed to finding a coronavirus vaccine and declared that the world will not return to normal until a vaccine for this pandemic is developed and the entire world has been vaccinated. Here's audio from a part of the New American Magazine's Behind the Deep State video series, May 5, titled Bill Gates, Globalist Technocrat Billionaire to Save You with Mandatory Vaccines? Play soundbite 4, please.
Tell you about a guy who's already dumbed down your children and virtually the entire American population of children, probably for a generation or two. We were now dumber than ever before, and a big part of the reason is this guy here. He also has more data on you than you can even possibly imagine. He's a totalitarian who's obsessed with reducing the population of humans on this planet. And he wants to inject you and everybody in your family with multiple doses of untested, untried, experimental vaccines, supposedly all for your own good. Stay tuned and I'll tell you who we're talking about and why you ought to be very concerned. So this globalist, he's a technocrat, he's a globalist, he's just obsessed with getting rid of people. And I'm referring to, of course, Microsoft founder and multi-gazillionaire Bill Gates, probably one of the most controversial people in the world right now, and for good reasons. Now, I'm going to go through a lot of what Gates is about and realize we're only scratching the surface here. But this guy, you know, you start by looking at what he says. It's creepy beyond what you can imagine. You started looking who he is involved with, creepy beyond what you can imagine. He's connected to, very closely connected to the mass murdering dictatorship in China, very closely connected to the Western elites, the deep state, of course. He regularly goes to Bilderberg. He is like this with all the criminals and terrorists and gangsters and technocrats running the UN agencies, especially Dr. Tedros, who we've talked about before on this program, an actual member of the Politburo of an ethno-Marxist terrorist organization from Ethiopia, famous for human rights abuses, trying to exterminate whole people groups, and he's not even a medical doctor. So this is, he calls Bill Gates his brother. Isn't that cute? Also connected to the Council on Foreign Relations. Go back and watch our episode. And, of course, he has to be connected to the child trafficking, child raping pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, who obviously did not commit suicide. Right. Now, with all these connections and with all the time that he's spending on television, right? Hey, you can't even turn on TV anymore without seeing this guy lecturing us about vaccines, this and health, that and response, this. You might be forgiven for thinking that this guy is already the emperor of the world. Well, if we're not careful, he is going to end up in that spot. And our liberty, our health freedom, our families, our self-government, even much of the human population are going to be in mortal danger. Now, if you've been listening, Gates has been telling us over and over and over again that nothing is going to go back to normal. Nothing can ever go back to normal until everybody on the planet gets vaccinated.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to basically the entire world.
Now let's hear more about this plan to vaccinate everyone on Earth. This is audio from a video presentation titled Bill Gates' Plan to Vaccinate the World on the Corbett Report at Corbett with two T's, report.com. That's CORBETTREPORT.com. This is an excellent website. Due to time constraints, we can't play all this video, but it's one of the four that James Corbett of the Corbett Report has done on Gates. I highly recommend you checking out this website and watching these videos if you want to learn more about Bill Gates. Will you play soundbite 5, please?
$10 billion. I mean, just speak about the magnitude of that. That is by far the biggest commitment of the foundation, isn't it, Bill? I mean, this is by far the largest.
That's right. We've been spending a lot on vaccines. With this commitment, over 8 million additional lives will be saved. So it's one of the most effective ways that health in the poorest countries can be dramatically improved.
In January of 2010, Bill and Melinda Gates used the World Economic Forum at Davos to announce a staggering $10 billion commitment to research and develop vaccines for the world's poorest countries, kicking off what he called a decade of vaccines.
Today we're announcing a commitment over this next decade, which we think of as a decade of vaccines having incredible impact. We're announcing that we'll spend over $10 billion on vaccines.
Hailed by the Gates-funded media.
For the record, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is a NewsHour underwriter.
And applauded by the pharmaceutical companies who stood to reap the benefits of that largesse. The record-setting commitment made waves in the international community, helping to underwrite a global vaccine action plan coordinated by the Gates-funded World Health Organization. But contrary to the Gates' own PR spin that this $10 billion pledge was an unalloyed good and would save 8 million lives, the truth is that this attempt to reorient the global health economy was part of a much bigger agenda, an agenda that would ultimately lead to greater profits for big pharma companies, greater control for the Gates Foundation over the field of global health, and greater power for Bill Gates to shape the course of the future for billions of people around the planet. This is Bill Gates' plan to vaccinate the world. You're tuned into the Corbett Report. Given Gates' pledge to make this a decade of vaccines, it should come as no surprise that, since the dawn of this coronavirus crisis, he has been adamant that the world will not go back to normal until a vaccine has been developed.
But we're going to have this intermediate period of opening up, and it won't be normal until we get an amazing vaccine to the entire world. The vaccine is critical because until you have that, things aren't really going to be normal. They can open up to some degree, but the risk of a rebound will be there until we have very broad vaccination. Well, they won't be back to normal until we either have that phenomenal vaccine or a therapeutic that's like over 95% effective. And so we have to assume that's going to be almost 18 months from now. And then the final solution, which is a year to 2 years off, is the vaccine. So we've got to go full speed ahead on all three fronts.
Just to head off the conspiracy theorists, maybe we shouldn't call the vaccine the final solution. Maybe just the
best solution.
Okay.
More interestingly, since Gates began delivering this same talking point in every one of his many media appearances of late, it has been picked up and repeated by heads of state, health officials, doctors, and media talking heads, right down to the scientifically arbitrary but very specific 18-month time frame.
Realistically, COVID-19 will be here for the next 18 months or more. We will not be able to return to normalcy until we find a vaccine or effective medications.
The hard fact is, until we find a vaccine, going back to normal means putting lives at risk.
This will be the new normal until a vaccine is developed.
The only thing that will really allow life as we once knew it to resume is a vaccine.
Obviously, we continue to work on the vaccines, but the vaccines have to be down the road by probably 14, 15, 16 months. We're doing great on the vaccines.
The fact that so many heads of state, health ministers, and media commentators are dutifully echoing Gates' pronouncements about the need for a vaccine will not be surprising to those who saw last week's exploration of how Bill Gates monopolized global health. As we have seen, the Gates Foundation's tentacles have penetrated into every corner of the field of public health. Billions of dollars in funding and entire public policy agendas are under the control of this man, an unelected, unaccountable software developer with no medical research experience or training. And nowhere is Gates's control of public health more apparent than in the realm of vaccines. Gates launched the decade of vaccines with a $10 billion pledge. Gates helped develop the Global Vaccine Action Plan administered by the Gates-funded World Health Organization. Gates helped found Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, aiming to develop healthy markets for vaccine manufacturers. Gates helped launch Gavi with a $1 billion donation in 2011, going on to contribute $4.1 billion over the course of the decade of vaccines. Given Gates's mammoth investment in vaccines over the past decade, his insistence that
things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to basically the entire world
is hardly surprising. What should be surprising is that this strangely specific and continuously repeated message, that we will not go back to normal until we get a vaccine in 18 months, has no scientific basis whatsoever. Medical researchers have already conceded that a vaccine for SARS-CoV-2 may not even be possible, pointing to the inability of researchers to develop any kind of immunization against previous coronavirus outbreaks, like SARS or MERS. But even if such a vaccine were possible, serious concerns remain about the safety of developing, testing, and delivering such an amazing vaccine to the entire world in this remarkably short time frame. Even proponents of vaccine development openly worry that the rush to vaccinate billions of people with a largely untested, experimental coronavirus vaccine will itself present grave risks to the public. One of these risks involves disease enhancement. It has been known for over a decade that vaccination for some viral infections, including coronaviruses, actually enhances susceptibility to viral infection, or even causes infections in healthy vaccine recipients.
Now, the issue of safety, something that I want to make sure the American public understand. It's not only safety when you inject somebody and they get maybe an idiosyncratic reaction, they get a little allergic reaction, they get pain. There's safety associated. Does the vaccine make you worse? And there are diseases in which you vaccinate someone, they get infected with what you're trying to protect them with, and you actually enhance the infection.
This is no mere theoretical risk. As researchers who were trying to develop a vaccine for the original SARS outbreak discovered, the vaccine actually made the lab animals subjected to it more susceptible to the disease.
One of the things that we're not hearing a lot about is the unique potential safety problem of coronavirus vaccines. This was first found in the early 1960s with respiratory syncytial virus vaccines, and it was done here in Washington with the NIH and Children's National Medical Center, that some of those kids who got the vaccine actually did worse. And I believe there were two deaths in the consequence of that study, because what happens with certain types of respiratory virus vaccines, you get immunized, and then when you get actually exposed to the virus, you get this kind of paradoxical immune enhancement phenomenon. And we don't entirely understand the basis of it, but we recognize that it's a real problem for certain respiratory virus vaccines. That killed the RSV program for decades. Now the Gates Foundation is taking it up again. But when we started developing coronavirus vaccines and our colleagues, we noticed in laboratory animals that they started to show some of the same immune pathology that resembled what had happened 50 years earlier.
This specific issue regarding coronavirus vaccines is exacerbated by the arbitrary and unscientific 18-month time frame that Gates is insisting on for the vaccine's development. In order to meet that deadline, vaccine developers are being urged to use new and largely unproven methods for creating their experimental immunizations, including DNA and mRNA vaccines.
We're going to start ramping up production with the companies involved, and you do that at risk. In other words, you don't wait until you get an answer before you start manufacturing. You at risk proactively start making it, assuming it's going to work.
You're thinking 18 months, even with all the work that you've already done to this point and the planning that you are taking with lots of different potential vaccinations and building up for that now?
Yeah, so the there's an approach called the RNA vaccine that people like Moderna, CureVac, and others are using that in 2015, we'd identified that as very promising for pandemics and for other applications as well. And so if everything goes perfectly with the RNA approach, we could actually beat the 18 months. We don't want to create unrealistic expectations.
So the concept of an RNA vaccine is, let's inject the RNA molecule that encodes for the spike protein.
It's making your cell do the work of creating this viral protein that is going to be recognized by your immune system and trigger the development of these antibodies.
Our bodies won't make a full-fledged infectious virus. They'll just make a little piece and then learn to recognize it and then get ready to destroy the virus if it then later comes and invades us. It's a relatively new, unproven technology, and there's still no example of an RNA vaccine that's been deployed worldwide in the way that we need for the coronavirus.
There's the possibility for unforeseen adverse effects.
So this is all new territory. Whether it would elicit protective immune response against this virus is just unknown right now.
That an experimental vaccine, developed in a brand new way and rushed through with a special shortened testing regime, should be given to adults, children, pregnant women, newborn babies, and the elderly alike, would be, in any other situation, unthinkable. To suggest that such a vaccine should be given to the entire planet would have been called lunacy mere months ago, but now the public is being asked to accept this premise without question. Even Gates himself acknowledges the inherent risks of such a project, but his concern is not for the lives that will be irrevocably altered in the event that the vaccines cause damage to the population. Instead, he is more concerned that the pharmaceutical companies and the researchers are given legal immunity for any such damage. Even Gates himself acknowledges the inherent risks of such a project, but his concern is not for the lives that will be irrevocably altered in the event that the vaccines cause damage to the population. Instead, he is more concerned that the pharmaceutical companies and the researchers are given legal immunity for any such damage.
You know, if we have, you know, 1 in 10,000 side effects, that's, you know, way more, 700,000, you know, people who will suffer from that. So really understanding the safety at gigantic scale across all age ranges, you know, pregnant, male, female, undernourished, existing comorbidities, it's very, very hard. And that actual decision of, okay, let's go and give this vaccine to the entire world, governments will have to be involved because there will be some risk and indemnification needed before that can be decided on.
As we have already seen, in the arena of global health, what Bill Gates wants is what the world gets. So it should be no surprise that immunity for the big pharma vaccine manufacturers and the vaccination program planners is already being worked on. In the U.S., the Department of Health and Human Services issued a declaration that retroactively provides liability immunity for activities related to medical countermeasures against COVID-19, including manufacturers, distributors, and program planners of any vaccine used to treat, diagnose, cure, prevent, or mitigate COVID-19. The declaration was issued on March 17th, but retroactively covers any activity back to February 4th, 2020, the day before the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced an emergency $100 million to fund treatment efforts and to develop new vaccines for COVID-19. The plan to inject everyone on the planet with an experimental vaccine is no aberration in Bill Gates' envisioned decade of vaccines. It is its culmination. The decade of vaccines kicked off with a Gates-funded $3.6 million observational study of HPV vaccines in India that, according to a government investigation, violated the human rights of the study participants with gross violations of consent, and failed to properly report adverse events experienced by the vaccine recipients. After the deaths of 7 girls involved in the trial were reported, a parliamentary investigation concluded that the Gates-funded Program for Appropriate Technology in Health, or PATH, which ran the study, had been engaged in a scheme to help ensure healthy markets for GlaxoSmithKline and Merck, the manufacturers of the Gardasil and Cervarix vaccines that had been so generously donated for use in the trial. Had PATH been successful in getting the HPV vaccine included in the universal immunization program of the concerned countries, this would have generated windfall profit for the manufacturers by way of automatic sale, year after year, without any promotional or marketing expenses. It is well known that once introduced into the immunization program, it becomes politically impossible to stop any vaccination. Chandra M. Gulhadi, editor of the influential Monthly Index of Medical Specialties, remarked that it is shocking to see how an American organization used surreptitious methods to establish itself in India. And Samarin Nundi, editor emeritus of the National Medical Journal of India, lamented that this is an obvious case where Indians were being used as guinea pigs. Throughout the decade, India's concerns about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and its corporate partners' influence on the country's national immunization programs grew. In 2016, the steering group of the country's National Health Mission blasted the government for allowing the country's National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization, the primary body advising the government on all vaccination-related matters, to be effectively purchased by the Gates Foundation. As one steering group member noted, the NTAGI secretariat has been moved out of the government's health ministry to the Office of Public Health Foundation of India, and the 32 staff members in that secretariat draw their salaries from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There is a clear conflict of interest. On one hand, the BMGF funds the secretariat that is the highest decision-making body in vaccines, and, on the other, it partners with the pharma industry in Gavi. This is unacceptable. In 2017, the government responded by cutting all financial ties between the advisory group and the Gates Foundation. Similar stories play out across the Gates Foundation's decade of vaccines. There's the Gates-founded and funded meningitis vaccine project, which led to the creation and testing of MenAfriVac, a 50-cent-per-dose immunization against meningococcal meningitis. The test led to reports of between 40 and 500 children suffering seizures and convulsions and eventually becoming paralyzed. There's the 2017 confirmation that the Gates-supported oral polio vaccine was actually responsible for the majority of new polio cases, and the 2018 follow-up showing that 80% of polio cases are now vaccine-derived. There's the 2018 paper in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health concluding that over 490,000 people in India developed paralysis as a result of the oral polio vaccine between 2000 and 2017. There's even the WHO's own malaria chief, Dr. Arata Kochi, who complained in an internal memo that Gates's influence meant that the world's leading malaria scientists are now locked up in a cartel with their own research funding being linked to those of others within the group, and that the foundation was stifling debate on the best ways to treat and combat malaria, prioritizing only those methods that relied on new technology or developing new drugs. Kochi's complaint, written in 2008, highlights the most common criticism of the global health web that Gates has spun in the past two decades, that the public health industry has become a racket run by and for Big Pharma and its partners for the benefit of big business. At the time that Kochi was writing his memo, the executive director of the Gates Foundation's global health program was Tachi Yamada. Yamada left his position as chairman of research and development at GlaxoSmithKline to take up the position at the Gates Foundation in 2006, and left the foundation 5 years later to become chief medical and scientific officer at Takeda Pharmaceuticals. Yamada's replacement as head of Gates' global health program, Trevor Mundell, was himself a clinical researcher at Pfizer and Park Davis, and spent time as head of development with Novartis before joining the foundation. This use of foundation funds to set public policy to drive up corporate profits is not a secret conspiracy. It is a perfectly open one. When the Center for Global Development formed a working group to develop a practical approach to the vaccine challenge, they concluded that the best way to incentivize pharmaceutical companies to produce more vaccines for the third world was for governments to promise to buy vaccines before they were even developed. They titled their report, Making Markets for Vaccines.
The project, Making Markets for Vaccines, was really designed to address a problem that's existed for a long time, which is insufficient research and development budgets as well as investment capacity in vaccine development and production for the third world. How do you create better incentives to get the pharma community, the vaccine community, to produce products that are specifically dedicated for the developing world?
Michael Kremer, a professor at Harvard, had been thinking about this problem for many years.
He realized that if the rich countries of the world were to make a promise that they would buy a malaria vaccine if somebody produced it, that that would give an incentive to the pharmaceutical industry to go and do the research and development needed to make one. But this idea was unfamiliar. No government had made a commitment to buy a product that didn't already exist.
When the first such advanced market commitment was made in 2007, a $1.5 billion promise to buy yet-to-be-produced vaccines from big pharma manufacturers, There was the Gates Foundation as the only non-nation sponsor. The Gates-founded Gavi Vaccine Alliance is an open partnership between the Gates Foundation, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, and vaccine manufacturers. Their stated goal includes introducing new vaccines into the routine schedules of national immunization programs, and to engage in market-shaping efforts to ensure healthy markets for vaccines and other immunization products. If introducing new vaccines and ensuring healthy markets for them was the aim of Gates' decade of vaccines, there can be no doubt that COVID-19 has seen that goal realized in spectacular fashion.
Let's start the pledging.
The EU kicked off its fundraising drive with 1 billion euros. In the hours that followed, pledges were beamed in from across the globe.
The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has pledged $500 million.
Even pop icon Madonna made a last-minute donation of 1 million euros.
By combining the world's expertise and brain power and resources, we can attack this disease in the way it's attacking us, globally. Our foundation is proud to partner with you, and I'm pleased to announce today that we will pledge $100 million towards this effort.
Germany was one of the leading donors, pledging over 500 million euros. The money is earmarked for international health organizations and research networks in a bid to speed up the development of a vaccine.
And there, at the center of this web, is the Gates Foundation, connected to every major organization, research institution, international alliance, and vaccine manufacturer involved in the current crisis. Certainly, the Gates, like the Rockefellers, have profited from their years as the most generous people on the planet. As curious as it might seem to those who don't understand the true nature of this monopoly cartel, despite all of these grants and pledges, commitments of tens of billions of dollars, Bill Gates' personal net worth has actually doubled during this decade of vaccines, from $50 billion to over $100 billion. But once again, we come back to the question, who is Bill Gates? Is he motivated simply by money? Is this incessant drive to vaccinate the entire population of the planet merely the result of greed? Or is there something else driving this agenda? As we shall see next time, money is not the end goal of Gates' philanthropic activities. Money is just the tool that he is using to purchase what he really wants. Control. Control not just of the health industry, but control of the human population itself.
With all the rush to get out a vaccine or vaccines to treat coronavirus disease 2019, COVID-19, I don't think I'll be among the first who volunteer for treatment with them. You might also want to consider holding off until we see what's going to come of all this. Well, that's a wrap for our show. As always, we hope you found the material presented here of interest. We'll be here again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot. Good night.